Okay. So today we'll dedicate to trying to understand a little bit the tefillah of v'chein tein pachtecha. So, as I was saying, tonight we will be trying to work on the tefillah of v'chein tein pachtecha. Now, the interesting thing about this tefillah in general, which is in a way the central tefillah of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that's the same but Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. On Rosh Hashanah we also developed this tefillah into, by the Musaf Shemoneh Esrei, we also developed it to Malchus, which also is about Kvod Shemayim and Malchus Shemayim, so it extends into that. But it's a tefillah on Kvod Shemayim. It's really davening that Hashem should return in His full glory with Mashiach and establish His kingdom over Klal Yisrael and over the whole world. That's what the tefillah is all about. And if you look at the Seder HaDvarim, of the order of how we do V'chein Patecha, it's in a logical order of one thing after the next. First, Hashem should exhibit He should become recognized by everybody in the world, and they should all form one unit in order to serve Him. And then, from one thing after the next, the Klal Yisrael will get back their kavod, Talmid Chacham will get back their kavod, Mashiach will come, and we'll be back in Eretz Yisrael. All the Avrei Avera will be destroyed, and Hashem will have finally Malchus Savhay Hashem Echab Ushmayacha. That's the Seder how we daven. The Seder, the way the events will occur, Bez Hashem, Lasad Lavay, that's how we daven that it should happen. Now, there's a few interesting things here. Now, I'm sure people have heard before, you're not familiar, are familiar, but there is a concept that in Rosh Hashanah you're not supposed to daven for personal things. You're supposed to daven for Kvod Shemayim, and you see that's the way the tefillah was set up, and you're supposed to focus on that. And the source for this is the Zohar, that the Zohar says that someone who davens for personal things in Rosh Hashanah is like a dog that's yelling, "Hav, hav, give me, give me." And the truth is, the Baal Musa say that nowadays, halavai, we should be like that dog who's yelling, "Give me, give me." Halavai, that we should scream about something. So that's true. And the truth is that other Svarim explain, Chassidus Svarim also, but even the Musa Svarim, I think Yisrael Salanter says that, it's not, of course, every person has to daven for all personal things. And by davening for personal things, you're exhibiting that you believe that Hashem is the one that gives you these items. It just has to be in the context of, we want these things in order to be to serve you and be able to be marbe kvod shemayim, and so on and so forth. Each to his own, in his own particular way of doing that. Now, that's all true, right? So you'll daven for your personal things, maybe you'll put in your bakasha somewhere, fine. But the fact is, we do daven for Kvod Shemayim, right? And when you're saying these words, you have to mean it, right? Or you have to try to mean it. And I would think that that's a difficult thing. It requires a madriga to be able to daven for Kvod Shemayim and actually mean it. Just let's be truthful with ourselves. We tend to daven for things that are important to us. You know, we understand and we feel and we're margish that that they're important to us. And Kvod Shemayim and Mashiach, we understand logically, you know, the importance of it, and we are we're maiminim and we want that, and we daven for it. But how do we get into it, so to speak? How do we make it something that we'll daven for with some sort of a brand, some sort of a emotion? How do we make it that we want it in a way that we can ask for it and really mean it when we're davening for it? That's a very hard thing, and being that on Rosh Hashanah, that is most of what you're davening for, it would be worth it to put some thought in trying to make it real. Make it that you're davening for it and you really mean it, you really want it. Now, how do we do that? How can we do that? Rav Shimshon Pinchas says an interesting thing. He says that, the Pasuk says, the Medrash says that even though on all other Yom Tovim it says V'hikrav tem oila, you're makrav an oila, you bring it as a carbon. On Rosh Hashanah it says V'asisem oila, you make an oila. And Chazal say it means you make yourself into an oila, you're makrav yourself. And he says it's this concept, the fact that we're davening for Shemayim and we're not davening for personal things, that's a Mesiris Nefesh, we're giving up from ourselves. We're giving up ourselves for Kvod Shemayim. That is what you're doing. And that's V'asisa Moila. That's one of the manifestations how on Rosh Hashanah you're doing V'asisa Moila, specifically by davening Kvod Shemayim and not davening for yourself. Okay, so now, good, that's hard. But and in this context, to preface what I'm about to explain, I want to just give an understanding of what it means in Mesiris Nefesh. Let me give you an example of a Mesiris Nefesh. Nebuchadnezzar story, I even know. But a father's in a boat, right? And his daughter is in the boat with him, and she's leaning over the edge, looking at something, she falls out into the lake and starts drowning, right? Father, who doesn't really know how to swim, jumps out to try to save her, right? And risks his own life. He himself starts drowning, gets his daughter back into the boat, and doesn't get saved, but he's willing to jump out and put his life at stake to save her, right? That's Mesiris Nefesh. That's a Mesiris Nefesh we all relate to and we could all understand, right? It's Mesiris Nefesh. You'll give up from yourself, you give up your life in order to save your daughter's life. Now, you're doing it, why are you doing it for your daughter? That's true. But are you not doing it for yourself? I don't think that's true. You are doing it for yourself, right? You're doing it for yourself. It's not selfish. It's quite the opposite of selfish. But that doesn't mean you're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it because you're driven by that fatherly instinct, by that you can't be civil, you can't go on with her without your daughter. You won't be able to survive or live a day with yourself if seeing watch your daughter drown and not jumping and doing something about it. So when we say Mesiris Nefesh, it's true, you're doing it for someone else, but it doesn't mean you don't want it. It doesn't mean it's not for you. It is for you. It's for you to the extent that it's so important for you, you're willing to give up your life for it. Right? It's something you need to do because your emotions drive you to do it. Your needs drive you to do it. That's what Mesiris Nefesh means. Mesiris Nefesh doesn't mean you do it because you don't want to do it. You're doing it anyway. Mesiris Nefesh means you're doing it because you want to do it, but you're willing to give up everything that would be looked as important to you for the importance of this concept. So when we say, you know, when we're davening for Kvod Shamayim, we have to find a way why it's so important to us, why, it's, and so to speak, we have to find a selfish reason why it's important to us, so that we can daven for it unselfishly. But so similarly, in a way, the father who's jumping in for his child, it can be looked at as a selfish act. Of course, it's not, because he's giving up his life. But he's doing it because he can't deal with it otherwise, right? He's doing it totally for himself, and at the same time, totally for him. That's what Mesiris Nefesh means. Mesiris Nefesh, in this context, is you're giving up from yourself because you can't let you understand you need this terribly, and you can't deal without it. So, let's think about it. Why is it that Kvod Shamayim and that Mashiach should come and that Hashem's Malchus should be Nisgal and the Bria, why is it that that's so important to us? Why are we davening for it? What is in it for us? Why do we need it? So, Rosh Hashanah Pinchas gives a mashal, beautiful mashal. We'll say the mashal and then we'll try to think about it a little, you know, to understand the mashal a little better. He gives a mashal as follows. He says there was a king, and this king had vast treasures, and you know, was extremely, extremely wealthy and powerful, and owned a huge kingdom, and was a very respected and loved king. And this king had an only son, and he decided that for this son, he'll invest everything, and he built a beautiful palace, and he designated a whole city just for the purpose of that. This will be this son's, you know, he'll start his kingdom off in that city, and he built up the whole city, and he populated it. And people were asking, what are you doing it for? You have plenty of kingdoms and plenty of countries that are all under your dominion. And he says, no, this I'm doing for my son. And as the son grew older, he hired teachers and he hired instructors to teach him and to instruct him in how to act properly and act royally and to learn all chachmas. It wasn't going. The kid wasn't interested. He learned a little bit, he didn't, and he started acting disrespectfully. He was disrespectful to the king himself. So the king told him, Hezekiah, you know, this doesn't work like that. You know, a king also is bound by mishpat. The king does what's proper and what's right. If you're not going to listen and you're not going to follow instructions, you're not going to be respectful to me, you're going to be sent away. So the son says, okay, no, I'll give it a shot. He tries again, and again he doesn't, a little bit he does it, then it doesn't work again. Eventually the king realizes this is not going, it's becoming a disgrace for him, a disgrace for his kingdom. He sends his kid out, he banishes him from his palace, sends him out into the open country. The kid is wandering around open country. He grew up in a palace. He didn't know anything. Didn't know from anything else. He didn't know how to navigate. He didn't understand how to survive in the countryside. So he goes and he travels, and eventually he falls into a deep pit, breaks his feet, and he's stuck there in the bottom of the pit, and he falls within an inch of his life. Now the king understood beforehand when he sent him out that this is going to happen. And on one hand, he needed to send away his son and to punish him properly in order that he should change and become a better person. He needed to do that. But on the other hand, there's also Pikuach Nefesh. He can't just let his son fall away like that. So he sent two servants of his, two of his highest ministers, to watch over him and to see what they can do to help him. So the servants are following the son, and they realize after a while, they hear him yelling in the distance, they realize something happened to him. So they follow, and they find this pit that he fell into, and he's way in the bottom of this pit. And they don't know what they should do. They're going to jump in, they'll also get hurt. They stay out, then he'll die. They can't do that either. So their Meiser Nefesh, they jump into. They get hurt, but they have with them some supplies, they have food, they have some medicines, and they start ministering to the son. But as time wears on, no one's bailing them out. And they start running low on supplies, and they're also falling into deep despair that, you know, they're also stuck in this bad situation. Now, in the meantime, the king, now that his son is out of the picture, destroyed the city, destroyed the palace. He doesn't need it for anything. What did he need it for? And he himself was so upset about the situation, he also started wandering around. And the ministers who knew this realized that during the course of the king's travels, what they understand, how he's mistaivev, how he goes around, he's going to at some point pass by their pit. And they thought, you know, that it'll be our chance, and maybe he can bail us out finally, he can save us. So they realize that the point, they figure out about the time of year when he'll come by, and one tells the other one, okay, let's start screaming our heads off. The other one says, I just don't have the power, the strength anymore. I know my life is dependent on this, but I just don't have the strength. I can't do it. You do it. So the other one does, and he starts screaming, and the king hears, comes over, looks over the side, and sees what's going on. And he says, oh, that's terrible. What can I do for you? So the guy says, well, I could use a little food. This is fine. I'll give you some food. Is it something else you want, maybe? So he says, well, a little medicine would help. He says, fine. Send some down some medicine. Anything else? No. I'm fine. So he goes away. So we all understand, you know, what's the nimshal over here? The nimshal is the king is a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and he set up Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash, all for the purpose of hoping that we can grow and shteig and become closer to him and become ruchnis to good people. What happened? We did chataim, we didn't listen, we were using it, and it was becoming, it was destroying us, the fact that we had this much access and this closeness to Hashem, and we were abusing it. He was forced to send us into Galus. We went into Galus. We didn't know exactly what to do in Galus. We were never tried and tested in Galus. We felt we got broken. Hashem set up in every Zar, he brings this in Makar from Sfas Sifra Kabbalah, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, Leich Reid, go down from Har Sinai, Kishichas Amcha, really it was a Nevuah L'Doiros, that Hashem sent down Tamid Chachamim throughout all the Doiros, Bnei Torah, throughout all the Doiros, Leich Reid, you should be the people that go down into the Galus, into the pit, to try to help and inspire and through your tefillahs, bring up the rest of Klal Yisrael. So Hashem sent Talmid Chachamim, but they themselves also, they're in Galus, and they're also negatively affected by the Galus. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes once a year in Rosh Hashanah, he comes by and he gives us a chance to talk to him. And we're going to start asking for food, we're going to start asking for medicine, for a little bit of petty things. Take us out of the bar, and of course everything will be better. That's his mashal. It's a beautiful mashal. So, let's just think about it for a second. Now, to make this mashal a little more realistic, why would the people in the bar taka not ask to be taken out of the bar? It's just a little ridiculous mashal, right? So how could they be so stupid? Why wouldn't... It's just obvious you need to go out of the bar. But the truth is, and there are actually, you know, this is things that are studied in psychology, is that it comes a point when they get so used to and so acclimatized to the surroundings that they're in that they either forget what it was like to be out of the pit, they forget what it was like to live on level ground, and also they sort of are not willing to accept the change. They're not ready to move on from what they've gotten themselves stuck into, even though it's obviously so much better. So this is the challenge that we face. In other words, yes, we can be told that if you would remember what it was like, you know, when the Beis HaMikdash was around, you'll understand that that is what you need. That's what we need. We need to be back on level ground and when things were the way they were supposed to be, and then all the other things will be, by definition, be catered to. But us, when we're here for so long in the Galus, and we lost all appreciation what it was like to live like a person, to live like a free person, so how do we come and bring ourselves to that feeling of that that's where we really want to be and that's what we really want? Now, the truth is that if you just think about it a little bit, you know, there's been a very popular theme in novels and I think in the entertainment industry also, that there's a dystopian, I think it's called, dystopian theme, right? They have novels about like the world in 20 years and 100 years and 1,000 years when the world got destroyed for this reason or that reason, nuclear wars, technology turning against us, all sorts of different reasons how the world destroyed itself, and then trying to picture what it would be like living in that situation, trying to get back what they were, and etc., etc. You know, we have such a picture of what it's like to live after everything else goes to pot. So the truth is that the difference between before the Beis HaMikdash and after the Beis HaMikdash was exactly that, on a ruchniistic scale. Before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the first Beis HaMikdash, Hashem was megala himself in an open way. There were nisim where the Hashem showed himself openly, and there was just no way to deny his existence, or no way to imagine there's such a thing of living without Hashem, without him looking at you, knowing about you. The climate was a climate that we can't even begin to imagine. It was a climate of the whole level of Nisayin, and the things we had Nisayinus about were a whole different ballpark. There was Nevuah, Hashem could communicate with us. Right? Think about just the depth of what that means, that Hashem could actually talk to a person. There could be actual contact back and forth between a person, a human, and Hashem, and things that were proven and tried and tested. People was a well-known, it wasn't something that was deniable. Right? So the ability, given that background, to be able to attach yourself to Hashem and to become greater and greater was tremendous. And the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and the sending us out into Galus was basically like a nuclear war. It destroyed life totally, and the new life was something totally not even remotely related to what it was previously. It wasn't the way we now have to conduct ourselves in Galus and relate to Hashem. We're missing 10,000 miles of closeness, because we're missing all that hisgalus, all that clarity that was here when there were Nevi'im, and when there was a Beis HaMikdash, and when there was Gilui Koed Malchus Shemayim, when he did Nisim publicly. So that's what we're missing. Now, we can think about that, and we should think about it a little bit, just what the difference is, and then we can start appreciating why it's such a big difference to us. And the reason why it's such a big difference to us is that, we can think about what it is that we need, right? So we need food, we need clothing, and we need to take care of our families, and we need health, and we need all those things. Let's say you had all those things. Would you be happy? Now, I know people that have all those things, and they're not happy. There's actually a famous person, an actor, that just killed himself recently. And he had all those things, so to speak, after a fashion. But he was very unhappy. And people have all the physical things that they could think and possibly want and need, and they still commit suicide or are severely depressed, and all sorts of other things are wrong with them. Why is that? Why are they so unhappy? Because the happiness is from feeling fulfilled. Physical stuff doesn't make us happy. We need it. And when we don't have it, it can make us unhappy, make stress. But having it does not make us happy. What makes us happy is when we feel we're fulfilling what we came for, when we have a purpose, when we're doing something with a purpose and we're fulfilling our purpose. And the problem is, we don't even know what our purpose is. Half the time, we're not even sure if what we're doing is the right thing, or if we're on the right way. Are we heading in the right direction? And when there was a Navi around, that wasn't the situation. When there was a Navi around, a Navi told you what you needed to be doing. The clarity was, the person could go to a Navi, every person, and could find out exactly what he was meant. The Vilna Gaon says, that is the point of a Navi. The point of a Navi was to instruct everybody what Hashem wanted from him. So imagine the clarity of that. You knew, you were doing whatever you were doing, whatever sug you were learning, however much time you were dedicating to tzedakah, to working, to Torah, you knew it's exactly what Hashem wants from you. Imagine the clarity of that, and how much sipuk and enjoyment you would have from doing what you're doing with the knowledge of that it's the right thing. Right, so we're missing, and even on a practical sense, every person realizes that he wants to be mushlam. Every person wants to reach some sort of madregas and ruchnias, and he's missing it. And the reason why he's missing it, every iota of that we're missing in our fulfillment and our self-satisfaction, is all because of that much kvod shemayim that we don't have clarity about. The more confused we are, the less we see Hashem, the less we see Hashem amongst us, the less we see Hashem being megala himself to us, the less happy we are, because the more confused we are. The more confusion we have about what's the right thing to do, what are we supposed to be doing. We go speak to people that are Tamid Chachamim, who have Das Torah, because specifically they aren't confused the same way that we're confused. They have that clarity because they're closer to Hashem. They see Hashem with more clarity. They have the ability through Torah, through Avodas Hashem, and through being davuk in Avodas Hashem, to lose some of the smoke screen that's going on over here, and they have some more understanding of what's going on, and that way they can make our life that much happier by directing us and telling what Hashem wants from us and what we need to do. So when we daven for Kvod Shemayim, what we're really davening for is we want so much, and this everybody can relate to, we want so much to know what we're supposed to do. We want to fulfill our purpose, and we can't do it because it's just too complicated to live in this type of situation. It's too complicated to live with everything so so muddled and so muddy and so unclear. And where so many contradictory things are going on in the world, where on one hand you see it so clearly, on the other hand you see such contradictory things, and it's so hard to understand all that. And with every drop in iota of Kol Shamayim that we get in Nisgala, it will become ultimately so much easier for us to relate and to become closer to Hashem and to help and perfect ourselves. And that would ultimately bring us to the Madrega where we're having or not having those things that we were mentioning would become really irrelevant. Obviously, we would need it to continue, but it wouldn't have any of its own importance. We wouldn't attach that much value to physical needs and physical thing because we would realize that it's all secondary to what our real purpose is here. And this is something everybody feels. This is something everybody innately feels, and you have to capitalize on it. And it's not easy. It's something that requires some thought. But a little thought, again, like I said, everybody has it. Everybody has that drive and has that push. Now, there's also, I'll just tell you a nice story, which just, also puts into context what it is that's so important about Kol Shamayim. I heard the story actually from Charlie Harari. They play him on the, I don't know if he is a speaker, play him on the radio in Lakewood. So he said he had a friend that he was, when his father had a textile business. And this is his father's only son. This friend was the only son of this father. And the father was waiting, and training his son his whole life, hoping that the son would join him in the business. But as these things go, obviously the son wasn't interested in joining his father's business. He wanted to make it on his own. He wanted to strike out on his own. After college, he majored in business and he joined an investment company. After working in this investment company for 3-4 years, he quit and went and joined his father's business. So Charlie Rowdy meets him and he says, "What's going on here? Your whole teenage life," he said, "there's no way I'm going into my father's business. No way, I'm going to be dominated and ruled by my father. I have to go out on my own." And then after 3-4 years, you're back in the business. He says, "I came through recognition. I was working as an investment banker and I was part of a big firm. My boss, the guy who was on top of me, would tell me to do something. I had no clue if what he was telling me to do was good for me. Would it advance me in the business? Was it only good for him? I didn't even know if I was impressing him, if I was even impressing the right person. He's just a player for someone else. So everything that I was doing, I don't know who I was doing it for. I didn't know if I was just running in circles as far as the advancement of my career is concerned. I had no clue if what I was doing had any meaning or to anybody other than that's what my boss asked me to do. Here, when I work for my father, even if he tells me to mop the floor, I know that what he's trying to do is make me advance in the business. He's trying to train me in. He's trying to give me the tools I need to be able to eventually take over and run this business. So whether I'm sitting in a board meeting, whether I'm sweeping, whether I'm on the phone, whether I'm doing customer care, whatever it is I'm doing, I at least have that recognition, that understanding that all this is all to advance me, is all to get me to the purpose of being able to get to my personal fulfillment." So that's what we're doing when we're davening for Kol Shamayim. We're davening for Kol Shamayim. We're being Meiser Nefesh because we're disregarding all of our selfish needs, but we're davening selfishly. We're davening because that's what Hashem wants. Hashem wants us to recognize Him. It's a selfish need that we need to be able to be close to Hashem. That's the only thing that's going to make us fulfilled. It's the only thing that's going to get us somewhere. That's the only thing that's going to make us happy. That's how you have to relate to the tefillah on Rosh Hashanah. When we daven for Galik Void Malchuscha, and we daven for Chein Tein Pachtecha, it's all that we should be able to finally get to where we're trying to get to. We'll be able to have some purpose in what we're doing, which is what we really want. Now, in the actual tefillah itself, we say Chein Tein Pachtecha. We daven for fear. Now, this seems like very odd, because most of us do not like being scared. That's usually the most base emotion that people dislike is fear. Maybe embarrassment, I don't know which one's worse. But fear or embarrassment, they're up there. Both two things that we do not like and we try to avoid. So how are we supposed to daven for fear and want it? But the truth is that if you've ever been in a situation where you had extreme fear, it's like if you've been in an accident, or if you, as happened to me, you're driving on the highway and it's snowing and then your car starts going like this and you have that second where your car's spinning around, you have no control, and your stomach drops and hits the, time. You say, "Oh my gosh, I'm not in control." Or if you slip yourself and you lose your balance. And that second as much as it's a tremendous, powerful, scary emotion, it's a second of real clarity. We're like, you know, when they say your whole life passes in front of you. So when we daven for fear, we're not davening for the fear that makes us scared and prevents us from doing things. Is the opposite. We're davening for the fear that's a motivator. There's a fear, the fear that clarifies things for us. Truthfully, a lot of things that we do because of a fear, right? We fear not being able to provide for our families. We fear not being able to be successful. We fear being a failure. All those fears are the motivating factor that helps us get somewhere in life. When we daven chen ten patacha, that's what we're davening for. We're davening, give us the clarity which will come through fear of Hashem, recognition of Hashem, that fear of real recognition, real understanding of what's important and what's not, and that will motivate us to do what we need to do and what we have to do and able to come to our full fulfillment and our full hatzlacha.